Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, constantly doing push-ups now that he's at home 24-7, my good buddy and producer extraordinaire, Cameron McCoy. Cameron, how's the process of getting ripped going?
It's great, man. I mean, there's no better time than now, right? I mean, every hour on the hour, 20 squat thrust, go.
Yeah. Dude, I want to live in this world where we all emerge from our homes.
Uh-huh.
Everyone is like very, like they look like the people from WALL-E because they've just been staring at their phones. And I am just jacked, like ready to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What I imagine is you and I will like reconnect after all of this and we'll just be completely shredded a la Predator. Where we do like the classic Carl Weathers and Schwarzenegger fist bump, and it's just like that
bro five
whiplash,
yeah,
that's us.
Yeah, that is the happy ending to this tale. I like it, Cameron. dude. So, as I'm sure you have, I've been able to play a substantial amount of Magic Online, or I should say, I've been playing Arena. I don't know if you've been on MTGO or Arena.
I haven't touched,
Or both, or whatever. You've been also playing a few video games, spoiler. So, anyway, lots going on. Cameron, what have you been playing with regards to Magic the Gathering?
Yeah, so almost exclusively Arena this week. And so, first and foremost, bug midrange in Standard. This has been hovering, you know, somewhere in like the top four or five the past couple of weeks on Arena. And this is just bug good stuff. It is like the new Uro, Hydroid Crisis, and then your who's who of just like really good, you know, bug colored planeswalkers and or spells, right? So the things of note, ramp in this current Standard is just so incredibly good that it almost seems like everybody should be doing that. The blue-green sorcery spell that allows you to draw a card and then put a land onto play onto the battlefield.
Growth Spiral.
Growth Spiral. I think it's like one of the most overpowered cards that still exists in Standard and like is just causing people to do certain things where we're getting like, you know, Nissa's on turn four now. And then, you know, untap with another force and all of a sudden you can play another Paradise Druid or something like that. It's just kind of incredible how perfectly situated green is still in Standard after the bannings of things like Oko and every other green spell that's just been vintage level good. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this bug midrange deck I really, really like. The thing that actually drew me to it the most is Casualties of War, which for me is my favorite card of Standard right now. Just because it's so hilarious how often you can shut down games with this. There's sometimes where it's not enough to, you know, wipe the board. But very often when I'm playing against... I'm trying to think. There's numerous times where it's just really, really good against like somebody who has like an enchantment, an artifact creature, another
fires.
Creature, and fires, right? You can just shut games down, and it's so hilarious. So I like this deck a lot. Like sometimes I feel like it's just really good quality cards and things that I love doing in Standard anyway. And I think this is a pretty solid mid-range deck. And if you're looking for something that's a little spicy, a little different, that's what I was looking for. This bug midrange totally hits the nail on the head.
Yeah, I've taken a break from Standard this week, but when I return, I'm really just considering giving in and just playing Fires. I've been staying away from that deck in Standard for like a long time. And it's kind of the thing that I think I should probably jump into. I do have all the cards for... blue white and Rug Reclamation, but maybe this just sounds like the least spiky thing ever, but it's true. I don't like playing Reclamation on Arena. Where you have to hit control, tap everything. I'm just not that fast with it, and I've never liked that play pattern. No, you know, what's also interesting about both Bant and Bug is those are the kind of Nissa decks that are still hanging out, right? Now that Oko and, you know, all these other cards are gone, Nissa's been very much relegated to the back of the, you know, the back of the queue in terms of powerful and important cards in current standard. So, now I think it's cool that you're playing her. Are you main decking Tamiyo, or what's your status?
Yeah,
there?
I think I have, is it 2 Tamiyo, 3 Nissa, 1 Vraska, and then a Liliana just
spicy
for value, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's super friends for sure. I love that. And Uro, like, we haven't really talked, I mean, this week we haven't talked about that card, but
it's a good card.
Dude, what a card. That thing, just having a 6/6 body attached to that is incredible with, like, all the upside that comes with just casting it twice in addition. Man, just so, so good. So I've had numerous games where that's the thing that, you know, 3 life matters sometimes a lot, like, especially on those later turns. That card is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a driving force for a Pioneer and a Modern deck.
Like, yeah.
So it's really, really, really good. You know, and in those older formats, especially, you know, Thoughtscour decks, like, you are literally able to escape him very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it really gets out of hand really quickly. You also have been playing some Historic?
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about Historic right now. I feel like things do need to be addressed. Field of the Dead is not fun to play against. Fun fact. I mean, I get why people are playing it, but, like, I still think that that was, like, probably the weirdest decision that they made from this last ban and restricted announcement. I'm playing Gruul Aggro, and this is, I mean, it's, like, you know, some Riot cards, you know, Questing Beast, and then you go, right? Domri, like, I mean, it's very, very straightforward as far as what it's doing. I think it's super fast and resilient, and yeah, with that and Burning Tree Emissary, like, I feel like I'm always on top. Like, I always feel like I have a really good game. There's certain things with Historic that I'm questioning what's happening. I don't know if you've seen, and I've played against it, and it's not cool, is the 45 land Thassa Oracle deck that
the Treasure Hunt deck. Yep.
Treasure Hunt. Like, I mean, like, it wins, right? And if I'm not playing a counterspell deck, if I can't beat them by turn 4, they are winning. Like, I mean, so it's just, like, one of those things where let's address this card, Thassa's Oracle or whatever it's called. Is that what it's called, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Number one problematic card I think they've printed from that Theros set. So it's there. It exists. I'm sure there's going to be some hate. Counterspell is, like, the easiest thing to hate out against it, but, oof, man, that deck.
Yeah, so, boy, I have a lot of Historic thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been hitting that, like, super-duper hard. I don't know if you remember earlier this week, Cameron, I sent you a GIF of Indiana Jones firing on a swordsman from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Uh-huh.
And basically, I told you, I've given up and I've started playing Field of the Dead, like Golos. So I spent a lot of time with Maverick. I also built Enchantress. And I do think there is an Enchantress variant that is quite good. It's much more like Boggles. I don't know if you played against this deck, but it is a deck that can turn for you if it has the appropriate draw. So, like, that deck exists. I was playing more of a junk, green, white, black, Sigil to the Empty Throne, make a bunch of angels, so more of a control Enchantress style deck. But that deck, there is something there. However, I do think the pillars of the format are Soul Sisters, Green Red Aggro, Field of the Dead, Treasure Hunt, and then some kind of control variant. The end. Those are the decks that, if you are serious about playing Historic, that's what you should be doing. Now, I will tell you, Golos, like, quote, Field of the Dead, whatever you want me to call that deck, I played a bunch of different versions of it. I played ones with Knight of the Reliquary in it and some other things. The Knight of the Reliquary variants are really good in the mirrors because you're able to search up Ghost Quarters and, you know, basically lock out your opponent. However, every other deck it's pretty much worse against. I ended up playing a much more controlling list. I have 5 Wraths main deck because of the popularity of Soul Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
4 Shadow of the Sky, 1 Realm Cloak Giant. I mean, that is what I do. I am looking to Wrath my opponent and then play Field of the Dead out and then like win that way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
However, what you're talking about is the edges of this format seem to be a little messed up. Mid-range, like true mid-range, is essentially unplayable because 2 of the top decks are Field of the Dead and Soul Sisters. Mm-hmm. Good luck winning those matches ever, ever,
right?
Ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Soul Sisters, like I've seen a Johnny Primates very regularly get over 15-15s. Like that's like nothing for that deck. Because they have Heliod, because they have a bounty of these like 1 mana life gain creatures, the deck just gets out of hand so quickly. Like, I can't believe I'm sitting here telling you that this deck is a legit tier 1 Soul Sisters is, but it is because it's very, very close to its modern counterpart, and we're talking about a much smaller pool of cards. Mm-hmm. It is very pushed and very good. And if you don't, like, then again, I mean, and this has been true of Soul Sisters forever, most of the time when you Wrath him, that is kind of that, right?
Yeah.
They do have some ways around it. I did play against one guy that had Adano Vanguards out of the side against for control,
okay,
which is pretty interesting. But, yeah, like a lot of times if you hit that turn 4 Wrath, it's like, all right, we're through here, friend. But I kind of don't understand the logic of what's been let in. And it really feels like they're just saying, you know, hey, what would be cool? What would be cool for us to put in? Like I said last time, there's a ton of Goblin support. There's a ton of Merfolk support. I think those decks are completely unplayable. Like, just straight up no good. And if they're serious about addressing these problems, first of all, I think Thassa's Oracle should just be straight up banned.
Yeah.
Or Treasure Hunt. Like, that deck makes the best of one queue completely unplayable. Like, miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Because... yeah, you could sideboard stuff in if you're playing against another deck or playing with another deck, but you don't have a sideboard option, and you are dead on turn 4 with that deck very regularly. So there's that. And then the Soul Sisters, again, I don't know how you would specifically address that. Maybe make the conditions of the format a little bit different. You know, maybe bring, you know, like add some storm to it. You know what I'm saying? Let's get crazy.
Right? Yeah, let's go crazy.
If in the words of Michael Keaton, you want to get nuts? Come on. Let's get nuts. Right?
Smash.
Yeah. Shout out to my wife who's had to endure that line from me from the snack aisle every time we go to the grocery store for like 20 years.
Nice.
Anyway, so I haven't loved Historic. I'm actually going to be heading back to Standard quite quickly. Especially since the FNMs that are going to be online are going to be that. But the thing that I'm kind of continuing to mess around with is Enchantress, because that's the kind of deck that I think is just not tuned right, but is definitely, definitely close.
Hmm.
And I mean, there are 2 Enchantresses available in Historic. Neither of them have Hexproof, but you can draw, if you want to draw some cards, you can draw some cards, right?
You're winning if you're drawing cards, in my opinion, right? So.
Yeah, who cares if you win or lose? Did I draw 7 cards?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Weird addendum. So to all this is, as you might have guessed, I'm having a lot of time at home with my kids. And I actually sat down with my daughter and we went through the tutorial of Arena. We created a new account for her. And you take for granted how much you just have already ingrained in your head.
Mm.
Right? The tutorial's pretty good, but she just kept defaulting. What do I do next, Dad? What do I do next, Dad? And she wasn't even listening to the tutorial, and I totally misread a card, and we died in the tutorial. And I was like, this is why you read the cards. This is a lesson. I went dad mode. This is your lesson. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes as she becomes a budding Magic: The Gathering player. She's played a little bit before, but
yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Anyway, Cameron, we're gonna get out of the segment. Come back, and talk about all these new digital Magic tournaments. So Cameron, here in the Midwest, basically every game store is in the process of shutting down for some amount of time.
Yep.
And I don't know, like you have this like mega store that you go to, right? Mm-hmm. That's also a comic shop and has other sources of income, correct?
Yep.
Are they a board game store as well?
They sell board games. I mean, the whole back corner that's dedicated to board games, yeah.
Right. Wow. Okay, so for some of my shops in my area, it's a little bit more dire. I'm seeing some interesting posts. One of our shops is basically like, hey, like listing all the board games they have in stock. Please order something, you know, kind of getting one of those and, you know, feel bad in terms of kind of what their situation is. Now, Wizards of the Coast, I want to be clear. This is not some kind of like bailout situation, right? But
yeah,
they're trying to keep stores' communities intact. As is Channel Fireball. We'll get to that in a second. But WotC's promoting this F&M thing through Arena. So basically, you as a player will get rewarded by in participating in this through sleeves, but you get to play on Magic Arena in a certain time frame. You have to post to your store's social media channel something about you playing there, and then you take a screen grab of that. This is like super convoluted, right? Mm-hmm. But essentially, that can result in you getting a code to redeem it for these custom sleeves. But the idea is that through Facebook or through Discord or whatever, your shop is keeping their community together and interacting and theoretically maybe purchasing from the store owner. What's your thoughts on this, Cameron, and will you be participating in something like this if it becomes available to you?
Good on them. I think this is awesome. I will 100% be supporting this. Any small way that I can be supporting my local game store, like, I want to, right? Like, I mean, like, do I want to run out, like, today and spend, just, like, drop $50 to help support that store because, you know, for the foreseeable future, they are closed, and like that is hitting so many of these like local small businesses, not just like Magic stores, but you know, like coffee shops, restaurants, these places that I truly do genuinely love and I want to support that local thing. Game stores right there. So I good on WotC for doing something like this. It's also great because like as much as I've been working from home for the last past week and probably for the next month, this digital interaction that you and I have every single week has become the norm for like how I interact with coworkers. And I still feel like having some sort of like digital interaction with like some of these people that I really truly, you know, love playing with, in a Magic community, I think is totally awesome. Gives me something to do on a Friday night, you know? Like, I mean, all those things that you go to a shop for, you can hopefully kind of get in some sort of digital supplement. So I totally support this.
Yeah, I think it's also nice to kind of, well, not to get too much into my personal thoughts, but I think it's nice to try and drag some of these stores off of Facebook. I don't know what your area is like, but, you know, I have like 5 or 6 shops in the KC Metro, and it's become the norm to just like, kind of here and there as you feel like it, post whatever's going on Facebook whenever you get around to it. And so then I have to know to go to your Facebook page to know what mm-hmm. the events are. And then if you didn't happen to post them, like if I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing this weekend on Wednesday and you haven't posted your stuff yet, because sometimes store owners are maybe not the most, they don't like to plan in advance maybe that much, or they don't consider that. You know, you kind of lose contact or you're not really engaged in a way. And so for me especially, I'm really hoping that more of these stores just have their own Discord server. It's a little more, private is the wrong word, but I don't need my dad seeing what I'm posting in a, you know, game store shop or whatever.
Yeah,
like it just so,
yeah.
Facebook just feels like I'm shouting in a public park about Magic the Gathering, which is strange. It's strange. And so Discord, like, it's a much more niche community, and I like that. I mean, Twitter is definitely, I would say, not the place for these things either. So I'm hopeful that that results in something. I messaged my local store owner, the shop that I've been going to the most in my, like, life, And he said that he wouldn't be participating in this, that he doesn't. I inferred that he doesn't see the benefit. I don't know for a fact, but he was just snapped off. We are not going to be participating in this whatsoever. And so that's a little bit concerning to me, you know, because I would really like to see people connect in this way. And so the guys that are at my normal shop that I normally play against are not going to be on Discord. So that's kind of a bummer. So maybe, Cameron, I'll join your shop digitally.
Yeah.
Like, I can live my dreams that way.
Yeah. You know, it's something that's actually interesting, and I think we're going to be talking about this topic a little bit later, but the reticence for shop owners to embrace Arena because it is a competitor to the FNM scene. But I think you and I are both proof, and like just depending on like our life schedules of like when I'm going to appear for a live paper tournament versus when I'm going to just pop in and out of Arena on a weekly basis, right? Like Arena is always going to be there for me. I'm not going to continue to use it. I totally get like why a shop owner might be upset with this, but I think they also have to realize that like we live in a world where there's going to be a lot of people who are like you and me and a lot of people I know where you do both, right? You like are going to hop on with Arena, but you're still going to have like be heavily invested in things like Legacy, Modern, Pioneer, right? So I guess I'm saying like don't treat Arena shop owners like the devil. I think there is still a place where both of you can mutually live together and both succeed. That's my opinion, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think you're wrong. I think paper is the better experience.
Yeah.
Like if I had it my way and I could play, you know, paper down the street every week, like I would probably do that as opposed to Arena. That's just not my life and that's not where I live, you know? But I think what they miss out on, and I have talked to certain store owners about this before that are adamantly against digital, and I think a lot of that stems from the early days of Magic Online and it being so expensive and it being something where people viewed it as a competitor. But really what it is, it's retaining people. It's retaining people's interest as their schedule allows. It's a safety net. When people quit, they can still fire up Arena and play that every once in a while, right? And still kind of maintain their love and interest of the game. Digital Magic has also made me not just an invested player, but a much better player.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like anybody that says, how do I get better? Not that they should be asking me that, for Christ's sake. But if they ask
they
me, how do I get better?
You're
right. You know, the number one answer is you need to be playing Magic Online. And when I was very, very seriously playing, you know, I would say Legacy specifically, my number one place to practice that was Magic Online. Like, there was just no other way for me to get better. And so I think this is a great thing from Wizards' perspective. We'll just jump onto the next topic, too, because it ties in. So Channel Fireball's got a very, very similar offering where they're bringing Magic Fest to you. It's like daily qualifiers. And they're offering Magic Online and MTG Arena opportunities. Some of this has real money attached to it, right? So they're trying to just create that setup, basically, of going to a GP. This is a little less appealing to me just because I can't be at my computer uninterrupted for this long. it's life with a toddler, man. But again, I think this shapes the new reality of where we're headed. It isn't a ill portent for shops. It's just what we need to do in this time to make Magic relevant and important in people's lives and be a great escape, man. Like, because I don't know about you, but being able to sit in Arena and just like put my mind on the fact that I'm playing this deck for a couple hours has felt really good, you know, considering. So
totally
any other thoughts on this stuff, man?
No, like I totally agree. I think honestly, like there's no better time to be a Magic player in some ways because like some of these communities on like Arena or MTGO, there's going to be a lot more people online playing, you know, which might just get you more excited to like, hey, you know what? I'm going to finally buy that Pioneer deck that I've maybe been sitting back on, right? Or I have digitally. So I don't know. Look at it as a blessing in disguise, right? It's a thing.
Right. So before we talk about maybe if you haven't gone out on your maiden voyage on Digital Magic. We're going to talk about that here in a second. But supporting your LGS. So right now, I'm talking with my daughter about what we're going to do. But my LGS, like many LGSs out there, are doing mail order, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave her a list of board games that I'm choosing between, or we're going to get a box of Magic cards and just play some sealed deck. But like, if you are one of the fortunate people right now in terms of finances, right, like your hours aren't being cut or whatever, and you can throw something to your LGS, even though they might charge you more for a box, I get it. Like, I understand you're a Magic player. You're all about that value. Think about how many years you've been playing there. Think about what those guys have provided for you.
Mm-hmm.
Think about you just giving something a little bit back, right? Instead of buying, you know, whatever other thing you're going to treat yourself to whenever you're stuck at home, just buy a cool board game, or buy a deck of Magic cards or something, man. Like, help them out, because God knows they're going to be feeling it. Rent's still going to be due, you know? And so that's just what I would highly recommend. I'm debating whether or not if I'm going to pick up Gloomhaven, Cameron. Have you seen this?
I don't know this. What is this?
This is normally off the end of the show contact. Gloomhaven is the heaviest board game ever printed. I believe it's 40 pounds.
Wow. So made from solid oak.
Yeah. But it is a 1-3 player campaign-based thing, and each campaign mission is like 2 hours long, and there's like 100 campaign missions in the game.
You had me at 1-3 players, man.
Yeah. Well, I know it's going to be me muttering to myself in the basement while my family is upstairs watching Friends or something. So, you know, Gloomhaven, it might be a box of cards. We're going to see. We're going to see what I can get my family talked into. Anyway, so support your local shop, Cameron. I'm sure you're in the same boat. Have you talked Stephanie into letting you buy something ludicrous from your card shop yet?
I'm working on like that black Lotus. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see.
Hey,
that's
Cameron.
That's I'm doing my part, right?
Yeah. Selfless.
Yes.
I mean, Cameron, I'm sure they already have a bust statue of you there, but I'm saying if you buy the Black Lotus from them, maybe they'll go full Mount Cameron Rushmore, you know, where it's just like you from different poses looking on, you know? I like it. Anyway, so Cameron, let's say I come to you. I'm like an F&M regular, buddy. I play Modern, I play Standard, I play Draft. I've never done anything digitally with Magic before. What should I do?
Why aren't you on there yet? Right? I mean, like,
well, I'm just not, Cameron.
I mean, like, the fact is like, you can, with enough time, invest $0 in MTG Arena right now, and over the course of 6 months, have probably 2 or 3 very playable Standard decks and possibly Historic decks now. So yeah, like, I mean, I have people in my shop who are like adamantly opposed to something like MTG Arena. I've never understood it. Like, I mean, that's their prerogative. I get it. But like, if you're wanting Magic content now, if you're wanting to play Magic the Gathering, like, I'm sorry, for like the next month, this is the situation we're in. And download MTG Arena and start off with a couple of those starter decks that they give to you for free, and play once a day. It's great.
Yeah, so a couple of my suggestions would be, so first of all, unless is if you are a hardcore Legacy player, I think that's the only argument you can make to me that you should play MTGO. Modern is on MTGO. I think it's a little overpriced. You know what I mean? It's also, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe overpriced is the wrong expression. I don't know that you're going to get the enjoyment back out of it that you're paying in compared to Legacy, right?
Sure.
Whereas with Modern and Pioneer, I think you can make an argument that you can kind of get part of the way there with Historic on Arena. and you're going to be playing with some of those cards, not all those cards. It's certainly a different format. But I don't know, like, if you're coming to me saying, yo, Curtis, I really just want to play, you know, Jund on MTGO, like, we're talking about $700, and I don't know that that's really worth it for you. Anyway, but Arena, I think, if you are of the means, there's, like, a $100 bundle that I think is the best way to go, like, in terms of purchase gems for the dollar. I would argue, unless you are a hardcore draft enthusiast, maybe drafting is not what you need to be doing. It's really not great. I think it's a lot better to just buy a bunch of packs, play standard constructed. I feel like with $100, you can get into most of what you need for a standard deck, and be ready to go from there. If the budget is a real issue, and for some people it really is, you can free-to-play Arena. You can also play a little game called Eternal. That game showers the packs on you, and you can play for free. You can get a lot further playing for free in Eternal, and it plays a lot like Magic than you can on Arena. So those would be my recommendations, but I also haven't touched Arena, or I haven't touched Eternal in like 8 months. So maybe it's just completely terrible now, and I don't know. But it did come out on Switch. That was the last time I played it. I downloaded it on Switch and then played it when I had the like Switch Online trial or whatever. So anyway, these are the times we're living in, Cameron. We're going to talk probably a lot about Digital Magic next week. I can't imagine anything else.
Probably not.
But anyway, we're going to talk a lot about video games as well. It's like we've been homebodies. We'll be right back. All right, Cameron. So what I love about you is the hashtag baller life that you lead. Two new games come out one day. Pick up both those suckers, right?
Yeah.
You don't even care. You don't even care. So what have you been playing, dude?
Yeah, to be fair, Animal Crossing, Doom Eternal. Animal Crossing, I don't know, it was announced like over a year ago. Maybe at an E3, I remember messaging my wife and saying, hey, new Animal Crossing is coming out. And like the anticipation at that day was palpable. So you can imagine leading up to this Friday release was very satisfying for her. Especially because, I mean, she played like the New Leaf DS game like a straight year. Like, I'm not kidding you. Daily she would come to that and play it. And she plays like the iOS Pocket Camp one as well. So she is an Animal Crossing aficionado.
Target market, huh?
Yeah, she loves that game. So anyway, we picked up Animal Crossing and Doom Eternal. You know, and like I think literally everybody in the entire world, having any sort of distraction is great. And I posted on Twitter that my wife on Friday morning when I downloaded both of them, pre-downloaded both of them, I'm playing Doom in one game. She's playing in one room. She's playing Animal Crossing the other. Vastly different games in so many ways, but so perfectly therapeutic for both of us, right? So like it was just like the perfect escape for both of us. Animal Crossing is great. I'll have a full review on that in like 3 weeks for you, okay? Because I know you're like on bated breath for that, right?
There's a raccoon. There's some dude named Tom. This is what I know.
Yeah, it's a fun game. And I think once we get further into it, it'll be super fun. But dude, Doom. Both of us have played Doom 2016. I just recently played that in January for the first time, and it's very steadily creeped up this like one of my favorite games of all time. Mm-hmm. Just because it was so fun. Doom Eternal just takes it up to 11, right? Like, I mean, if it was on 10, it goes to 11. And it's dumb. There's a story there. But at the end of the day, the developers knew exactly what they were developing, which is like, how do we make a heavy metal album and distill it into a video game, and you get Doom, right? It's very challenging. It's very violent, very gory, very heavy metal, but it's very aware of what it's doing. And I always have like this weird spectrum with video games where whenever there's a video game that's trying to be very serious while, like, I'm just mowing through people and, like we're making a commentary on war and, like, how bad it is. And, like, that's great after I've just killed, like, 200 digital people, you know? Yeah. Like, sometimes I just feel like it's like there's a disparity there.
Just be Doom a game, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Doom knows exactly what it's doing. Like, you're just, like, mowing down Hellspawn, man. It's, like, it doesn't care. Like, it's just, like, here's some, like, Metallica-like music, you know, set to a hell landscape, and you just use every gun that you have in your arsenal, and we're going to have a good time. It's great. Like, everything that you liked about Doom 2016 is just taken to that next level that just makes it, I mean, if there could not be a more perfect therapeutic 2020 game than Doom Eternal right now. So highly recommend, super fun, super dumb. Like, I'm having a blast with it. So buy it.
I cannot wait to play it, dude. I cannot wait to play it. I have the money set aside. I've just got to get through some other things first.
Yeah.
No, dude, like, the weird thing, and this is my only real critique, and this has been every id Tech game. So all the recent Wolfensteins, Doom 2016, and Doom, like, I haven't played Doom Eternal. But I find that they often feel a lot like a PC game grafted to a controller. So I feel like I don't aim nearly as well as I do in Halo, Call of Duty, any of these games that are a little more tuned for a controller, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Though it's also weird. Like, Call of Duty's engine is way back when was based on the Quake engine. So these games are, like, from the same tree, which is, like, not what you would think, but they are.
Yeah.
But no, dude, like, just the how refreshing Doom is. It's weird to think, because it used to be so ubiquitous, right?
Mm-hmm,
And everything was a copycat. But now it's like, hey, this is the palate cleanser to these other things that you're doing.
Yeah.
So, Cameron, here's what I've been up to. So, a couple things. I found out that I was going to have, like, 2 months off in a row, basically. I should say off, but working from home, like you. And I'm also going to be spending a lot of that time with my children, because they'll be here with me. So my game time is going to be relegated to early in the morning or in the late evenings. And I told myself many moons ago that Sekiro wasn't too hard for me. I just didn't have the time to devote to it. I never brought myself to delete it off my hard drive. And there it was, guilt tripping me when I was trying to plan out what my kind of queue would be and this coming month or in change. And it was just like kind of calling me out. I felt like it was like, look, are you scared or you still don't have enough time? Because now it feels like you got a lot of, like, fine. So I'm using a guide now. And Cameron, the way I feel about this game is so complicated. Because it is one of the best games ever made. But it is also, it has one flaw. And that flaw is, it's too hard. And that is, it is such a weird, all of the great level design stuff, it's Dark Souls, but if we made an action game. Is the combat quite as good as Neo? No. Is the level design better? 1,000%. The level design was what From Software does. It's what we've been, like, on and on about with Dark Souls, as you and I have discovered it this past year. But there are these moments, though, where the difficulty tunes you in such a way. And it's so hard to explain. It's almost like a rhythm game. I'll give you an example. There's a boss that is widely considered to be one of the most difficult bosses. It took me, like, 5 or 6 tries, right? And then the next boss fight is 2 of that guy, right? At the same time. And I smoked the second one. Like, 2 of them at the same time, I demolished them, no problem. And it was because the game had trained me so well with fighting these guys that it was like, 2, no problem. And those moments where it actually happens, when it actually clicks, are so strong. And I know you had those moments in Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
In Sekiro, because there's no stats, there's nothing to really hide behind. It is you, a sword, and the jump button. Let's go. I mean, you just want to break your controller in half and yell, "Who else wants some?" Like, it is just... it is so good at that. I will say that, you know, in terms of difficulty, late game Neo bosses were also in this kind of ballpark of like obscenely hard. Mm-hmm. That we just didn't experience in the first Dark Souls. But I mean, I'm gonna do my best to finish Sekiro. I'm like at the Owl Shinobi boss fight, so I'm like 3/4 of the way through the thing. But yeah, it's pushing me. It's pushing me pretty hard. And I hear the last boss fight is like, you know, you can only get hit twice, and the boss has like 4 life bars or something. Like it is,
okay. Yeah.
It is one of those, right? So the question is, Cameron, when are you going to be man enough to step into this?
Dude, I mean, I've told you this. We were texting earlier today. Dark Souls left a huge void in my heart. Like, I'm trying to go back to Bloodborne right now, and it just doesn't sing on the same level that Dark Souls does. So maybe Neo is really what I'm lacking. Although, like, you don't have a block button, right? There's no shield in Sekiro.
Neo, yes, you could block, but Neo was way more dodge-oriented. Mm. Neo also was very gear-oriented. So, like, yeah. It had, like, the structure of Dark Souls, but it, like, the loot was like Diablo. So everything was like the, you know, great longbow +7, blah, 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 and they mm-hmm. would be purple loot and all that. Neo doesn't have any stealth elements. Sekiro does have stealth elements. So like the, you know, run of the mill guys in Sekiro, you can actually just get behind and just stab and then that's it. What's kind of nice about Sekiro is you don't have to farm. Like you can, but you don't really need to. Whereas Dark Souls, I at times I hated it and at times I loved it. Like it was super satisfying to level up.
That was my jam.
So... No, Neo 2, like, dude, if this thing goes on much longer, we're going to be ordering a PS4 and with mm-hmm. Neo to come to my house, because I don't know if I can wait that long, and these consoles apparently are likely off track now in terms of coming out to the holiday season.
Yeah, that's true.
So, anyway, no, but we'll be playing more games this week, almost assuredly. But Cameron, if someone would like to get a hold of you and invite you to their digital FNM, where could they find you?
That's all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I'm @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.